On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, there are 2 weeks left in this Major League Baseball season. Oh my gosh, where did the time go? Time flies when you're doing podcasts. On this episode, we'll chat about the games that happened over the weekend. Who swept? Who didn't? Who embarrassed? Who didn't? Who played? Who didn't? It's everything you could ever want and more right now. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world for whom stretch run is not an exercise, but a way of life. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. Jordan, when's the last time you did stretch run?
Ooh, I mean, stretching, you know, that happens for me every once in a while, even if I'm not preparing to do some sort of strenuous exercise. But running, that's not really on the agenda very often. I've been going for some bike rides, but okay. the old let's just go run around the neighborhood. Yeah, that's not something I'm doing now.
No. Well, then Jordan is not qualified to talk about the final couple of weeks of the Major League Baseball season because he hates stretch run. On this episode of this wonderful podcast, we review the weekend as it happened. Yankees, Red Sox, Dodgers, Giants, Mariners finish a mop, and a whole lot else to get to. We have what, dude? 2 weeks left? Four Serie remaining?
Yeah, we are.
I mean, this is...
We are winding down. This is it. We've been... How we got here is a little strange. I know we spent a lot of July and August being like, is September going to be remotely interesting? And in some ways, it's still a little bit sleepy, but these teams are keeping it interesting, some for better, some for worse. So let's get into it. Let's get to our opener.
Rivalries are just friendships of hate, when you think about it for a second. And there were two of baseball's biggest rivalries over the weekend. That's what we're going to start with. Yankees, Red Sox, Dodgers, Giants. We will begin in Boston, where the Yankees took 2 out of 3 over the Red Sox, winning on Friday. Pedro Martinez throwing out the first pitch, honoring his podcast appearance with us. Luis Hill, he goes 6 hitless. Aaron Judge hits his 47th. Lucas Giolito just okay. Yankees win 4-1. Game two, they bring out David Ortiz, Big Poppy, future podcast guest, ?
Calling a shot.
We don't Love have it. Any plans.
Love it.
But seems doable, I guess. Bayo lets up 2 in the first. Fried cruises, gets into some trouble. Fried has been doing this thing recently this year where Boone comes to get him and he talks his way into staying in the game. And I need to go look at the stats, but it never ends well, it seems.
Yeah.
Boone goes out, yeah. Fried's like,
yeah, I feel like he's honoring Garrett Connor Cole. Wong. He's like, this is what Garrett Cole would be doing if he was healthy. But instead, it is my obligation to tell Aaron Boone, it's fine. I'm good.
It is not good. He allows an RBI single to Connor Wong. That is hard to do. Weaver comes in, gets out of it. Yankees hold on to win 5-3. They go for the sweep on Sunday. Red Sox score 6 runs in the first inning with Garrett Crochet on the mound. The Yanks claw their way back into it. Judge hits number 48, popping one off Crochet, opposite field blast. Not enough. Sox hold on to win 6-4.
Yeah, and you know, this was an interesting weekend that really required the Blue Jays to play much worse to make it more compelling for the Yankees. But still, as this concluded the run of 4 consecutive series against decent teams for the Yankees, this is a good showing. They go 7-5 in this run against Houston, Toronto, Detroit, and Boston. And especially with this series win on the road against Boston, I think they have to be feeling pretty good. That said, as we've said many times on these weekend recap episodes, the optics of losing on Sunday and just the vibes is always disappointing, especially on Sunday night, to kind of come out and just immediately have Will Warren, you know, essentially pitch you out of the game from the jump. I know they ended up sort of coming back. It was a bit of a disappointing ending to the series. That said, I think the Yankees still have some reasons to be feeling good. most notably is that Aaron Judge is now, it's like, oh, yep, there he is. There's the guy. There's the best hitter in the world. He is sure doing it again. And I think that that, honestly, on its own, has to make Yankees fans feeling good, on top of the fact that now that they are past this run of playing good teams, they finish with the easiest schedule in baseball. Now, is that enough to make up a four-game gap plus a tiebreaker to win the division over Toronto? Not going to be easy, but the schedule at least offers them that opportunity.
Sure. I mean, they have to make up five games in 13 games. It just doesn't feel realistic. And I now feel pretty sure that it's going to be Yankees Red Sox in that 4-5 matchup in the wild card round of the playoffs, which, I mean, that's just, are you happy with that? Like, would you rather have Yankees Red Sox later on in October this particular season? Or does this feel like an appropriate place for them to duel it out?
I think it's appropriate. I also think it's fitting to kind of, it's like, that's what they get for, that's what Toronto has earned, is to watch these two have to duke it out in a short series. We've had one of these in the one game setting, and that was plenty dramatic. I think getting it in a three game setting will also be interesting. And I will also say, with the Red Sox winning this game on Sunday, at least keeps them within striking distance. Now, again, the schedule is very much in the Yankees' favor, but there's at least enough time for maybe the Red Sox to make a push and steal home field between those two teams for, you know, that three game set. Seems unlikely, again, because of the schedule. That said, I'm looking forward to it. I think those two teams in that three-game set is going to be pretty compelling, especially if it lines up so that the last couple games, they kind of know where they're headed and that they can set their pitching going into that three-game series, is what I'm kind of hoping for as a neutral. And it seems like that's fairly plausible, depending on how the rest of the American League shakes out.
I would say Yankees Red Sox wild card game would feed families, but it's on Yom Kippur, so it actually won't.
Well, if it makes it to the third game, could it make it to break fast? Yeah, okay. So
it could feed whole families.
It really just depends how long the series goes. That is an interesting subplot of that potential rivalry in the postseason. So Red Sox Yankees, again, we'll have some more AL East chatter here in a second with what Toronto did over the weekend. But let's go to the other side of the country, where the Dodgers took 2 out of 3 over the Giants. Now, once again, this is another case of like the optics of the up and down of a weekend series where, I mean, listen, I know they played better during the week last week, but Friday night, was it as bad? Was it as much of a low as the loss against the Orioles? It wasn't as much of a sequence of unfortunate events, series of unfortunate events. That said, it's Friday night. Yamamoto dominates pretty again, bad. And Patrick Bailey hits a walk-off grand slam against Tanner Scott. And now this was, you know, the blow of this loss was cushioned by the fact that this was the same day that the Rockies beat the Padres. So it was much easier for the Dodgers to be like, you know what, I'm just going to pretend that never happened and we're going to move on to Saturday. It does seem to be that that's how the Dodgers handled it, as they went on and won fairly handily over the next couple of days. But I don't know if we should gloss over that loss too quickly, mostly because walk-off grand slams are cool, and oh my God, Tanner Scott keeps getting crushed.
Yeah, so there's two sides of this. One is the missed call, which kept this game alive. Tanner Scott appears to strike out Jung-Hoo Lee, who foul tips it into Ben Roethlisberger's glove behind the dish. The ball is ruled to have hit the ground. It definitely did not. That keeps the inning alive. Jung-Hoo Lee walks. Patrick Bailey, walk-off grand slam. This felt like the Giants are alive moment. A moment where it was like, for the first time since 2021, this team is interesting. It is electric. It has energy. It is zest. It is verve. And then it immediately pooped the bed on Saturday and Sunday with two veteran pitchers showing very poorly. Logan Webb, bad in game two on Saturday. So was Kershaw, but the Dodgers' pen, besides Kirby Yates, was better than the Giants' pen. Ohtani hits number 49 in that one, ho-hum. And And then Robbie Ray is not good enough on Sunday. Glasnow has wildness, but he throws 6 2/3, which is, I believe, a Glasnow complete game. The Dodgers have 18 hits, no homers, and win 10-2. Excuse me.
Yeah, and you know, we'll get to the Padres a little bit later, but the Padres unable to mop the Rockies. I mean, sure, they take 3 of 4, but like we said, every game at this point, if you want to have any chance of catching the Dodgers, is going to be important, and even just dropping one and the Dodgers winning this series ensures that the Dodgers remain 2.5 up on the Padres. Also relevant is the Dodgers' glimmer of hope to chase down the Phillies for a bye through the first round. Now, that would be a lot less relevant were these teams not about to play, but the Dodgers at least have an opportunity to close that gap this week facing the Phillies for 3 games in LA. Obviously, even if the Phillies get one of those, it is going to be very difficult mathematically for the Dodgers to chase them down and avoid the wild card round. That said, that opportunity is there for the Dodgers. As for the Giants, like you said, Friday felt like, here we go. The Giants are alive. They are going to do this. They are going to chase down the Mets, who are just can't stop losing. More on the Mets in a second. And the most interesting thing here, we got this news, I think, overnight, basically, is that the Giants are calling up Bryce Eldridge, their top prospect, for these last couple weeks. This is according to Susan Slusser. And this is quite the time to kind of push some buttons. Love here. It. As Bryce Eldridge, who does not look 20 years old, you're going to see. This is like kind of the opposite of Jonah Tong, where it's like, who's this child throwing games for this playoff team? This looks like a grown man, and he hits the ball grown man distances, but he is 20. He does not turn 21 until next month. He was their first round pick just 2 years ago out of a high school in Virginia. And this is an aggressive move, and one that I kind of like. Now, the likelihood that he is, I think Dom Smith got injured, I believe, and that's why they now have a hole at first base. But Bryce Eldridge is one of the top power prospects in the minor leagues. He does strike out a ton, and there is a chance that in this aggressive, you know, hey, come up and help score some runs and we can make the playoffs, maybe he just strikes out a million times and is not really relevant. But even the opportunity for this guy to just hit the ball over the fence a few times over the next 2 weeks is enough to make the Giants, one, as we've just said, more interesting to watch, and two, maybe it does give them a spark that maybe they could have used a couple months ago. Maybe who's to say? So I'm excited to just add this to the mix in these last couple weeks.
Absolutely. We've talked a decent amount on the show about Yankee prospect Spencer Jones. And I think in the general baseball consciousness, people know about Spencer Jones because he is a Yankee. Bryce Eldridge is, I would say, from an offensive standpoint only, just a more bankable version of Spencer Jones, where it's tons of swing and miss, not as much as Spencer Jones, and tons of power. Probably not, like, would you say they're both 80 power? They're like both top of the scale. I would say Jones is an 80, Eldridge is maybe a you wouldn't 75 anything, but yeah. It's maybe a tick below.
Yeah, I would say the important difference also just in evaluating them as prospects is that Bryce Eldridge is like 4 years younger and is also, you know, succeeding in AAA. And so that's what makes him, even though he's clearly a first baseman, unlike Spencer Jones, who could like play some center field and that impacts their prospect value. The fact that Bryce Eldridge is 20 and like having success at AAA is why people are more excited about him, because this is where age is very relevant. Spencer Jones, a college player who is still striking out even more than Bryce Eldridge and has some more holes. But no, there are definitely some comparisons. I just said but for the purposes of this short term, how much are we expecting of him? I think I'd rather have Bryce Eldridge long term than Spencer Jones, but either way, right now he could run into some balls. He could hit some balls into the water, which would be awesome. I know they're going on the road here for they got Arizona and then the Dodgers on the road, so we'll see how this goes. But I like I said, this is an interesting just thing to throw in there. Last couple weeks,
he's gonna hit a ball like 117 or like 116, and people are gonna be like, "Whoa!" It'll probably be like a ground out. But he is definitely someone being worth getting excited about. Did you see how Dom Smith went down, by the way?
No, I didn't. I did not see this.
I think it was on Friday. It might have been on Saturday, but I'm pretty sure it was on Friday. They turned like a preposterous double play. And he like stretched past his limit. Yeah, it was in the fourth inning.
I did see this. I didn't realize he got injured. Oh, no. Yeah. That's
yes. Tough. So this is something that I always think about is when first basemen stretch for balls. Like we're all limited in our amount of stretch run, as I mentioned in the open. And Dom Smith went so far past his breaking point to secure this particular play that he had to go on the aisle. So if that's how he went down, like getting this double play or like ending this play, sorry, not a double play, like inning ending play with like runners on. If this is how Dom Smith goes down and this is his last contribution to the Giants, like that's so heroic, dude.
Yeah, that's true. No, I, again, putting the stretch and stretch run, but that is unfortunate. We wish Dom the best. And now we get to watch this 20-year-old try to hit major league pitching for the first time in a desperate playoff push. Okay. Those are the rivalries, rivalry weekend for these two teams. Not as spicy as Twins Brewers and, you know, Padres Mariners, but we'll take it.
But again, this is why rivalry weekend is silly, because these teams don't play on rivalry weekend.
But I will say, in Dodgers Giants, we will get again next weekend. So we'll see where those two teams are at in a few days. But there is one more edition of that rivalry. All right. We have four sweeps, including a mop. Let's get to it. How sweep it is.
Clean up, everybody, everywhere.
There is no shame in getting swept. I never got swept. You guys got swept.
All right, folks. We had four sweeps this weekend, 10 potential sweeps going into Sunday, but a whole lot of salvaging going on, and so we only ended up with four. And let's begin in Seattle, where not only in the Pacific Northwest did the Everett Aqua Sox claim the Northwest League crown. Let's go Frogs. Congrats. That's why I'm wearing their hat today. The Seattle Mariners completed the four-game demolition of the Sad Sack Angels of Anaheim. It began on Thursday with a game we already talked about on Friday, a ridiculous 12-inning victory ended by Harry Ford, the rookie, with the walk-off sack fly on Friday. Luis Castillo, who has been pretty disappointing recently, he shows up. He was quite good. Mitch Garver, oh my goodness, now we're getting contributions from everybody. Garv Sauce, go-ahead homer in the bottom of the seventh. Mariners win a close one, 2-1. Then on Saturday, here comes Brian Wu, who has been the Mariners' best pitcher all season long. All-star strikes out a career-high 13. As good as Brian Wu has been, has never struck out more than 9 in a game until Saturday. He punches out 13. Joe Adell's 36th homer was really his only blemish. JP hits a homer. Matt Brash gets the save. Mariners win 5-3. And then on Sunday, George Kirby against Kyle Hendricks. Kyle Hendricks?
Wow.
Still in the big leagues, God bless him, but not very good anymore. He gets destroyed. George Kirby, honestly, if the Mariners were not scoring so many runs, I think George Kirby had a really good chance at like pushing this no-hitter perfect game effort a little bit deeper. But I believe he had to sit for like 45 minutes during one of these early innings and immediately came out and gave up a home run to Christian Moore. But that was not the headline, of course, as Cal Raleigh hits his 54th homer of the season to tie Mickey Mantle for the most by a switch hitter. We got a great email about that I want to address briefly. But
great email.
Great email, and I do want to talk about this. But the Mariners win 11-2 to complete the mop all four games over the Angels. Just to sum up where the Angels are at before we talk about the first place Seattle Mariners. Again, get mopped, eliminated from the AL West. This is from Sam Blum. 10th straight losing season. Or I guess without a winning record, did they have a 500 season in there? They struck out 62 times in this four-game series. Wow. They are making a late push for the most strikeouts by a team ever. And yes, they used their sixth position player of the season as a pitcher. They stink. They are an embarrassment. Meanwhile, the Seattle Mariners have won 9 games in a row. They have not lost since Mariners fan Stephen Blackburn decided to ask an Etsy witch to cast a spell to turn the Mariners season around. Folks, it has
worked. You can't say that. You can't just say that sentence, I think. I mean, you did. But you said it as if people I don't think all of our listeners know all of those words.
All right. I'm going to do my best. Yeah.
Thank you.
So I think the reason why I said it so casually is that we haven't mentioned it yet on the show. And it has been just Mariners Twitter has been talking about this nonstop for 10 straight days. And so it's like in my head, sure. This is just like common knowledge. But I'm well aware that it is not. And I'm well aware that the combination of words are rather confusing. Anyway, yes, there was a Mariners fan who it was 10 days ago, things were kind of bleak. They had gotten swept they came to Cleveland. They looked terrible. They get swept by the Rays at the Stein. They go to Atlanta. They lose on Friday. And after that loss on Friday, Stephen Blackburn, who posted one of the great members of Mariners Twitter, he basically posted being like, guys, we're desperate. I have paid a witch on Etsy. What is Etsy? Etsy is a website where you can, people can. Etsy is a tough website to describe. Etsy, what can't you get on Etsy?
This is why I'm confused. This is why I'm confused. In my mind, Etsy is to like acquire art, like and homemade items. And I didn't,
which it is.
Hiring a witch to cast a spell on something, that feels more like Craigslist or.
Well, sure, like but why not? It? Why not? I think, yeah, right. Tag or like Fiverr. It's like, hey, can you do this? But either way, I mean, I'm sure they're selling all kinds of services on Etsy. And anyway, he decided, hey, let's whatever. We're desperate. Let's try it. So they said, hey, please, can you cast a spell for my beloved baseball team and do something? And I mean, again, they scored. They beat the Braves 28-4 over the next 2 days. And then we're off. And basically, immediately, because this tweet went super viral, everyone has rallied around this incredible, just hilarious. It's a bit. It's a meme. And this is also fan-produced, right? Because this is the thing. We'll always, this time of year, it's like, what random stuff are fans or teams going to rally around? And this is a fun one because it's fan-originated. It's not some inside joke in the clubhouse that kind of makes its way out and we only like sort of half understand it. Now, listen, I understand there are still people that are very confused about what the hell I'm talking about. But this is cool that it is a fan-inspired, fan-created, and that has... And then the team, at least on social media, has certainly rallied around it and getting a lot of witch emojis and everything.
I have two thoughts on this. So, as someone who has never hired a witch to do anything, I can't speak with authority on this, but I'm going to do my best. Number one is, how many games do the Mariners need to win for the witch to throw out a first pitch?
A first witch, right. Ceremonial first witch. I had this thought too. We've got just these incredible images of people dressing up as witches going to the playoffs. Because, right, like this is presumably, right, like a person who's doing this. I believe the Etsy shop is called Spell by Luna. So I don't know if Luna's the person's name or whoever. I'm not sure if we've contacted the witch any further than this, other than Stephen, who has just, clearly has, by the way, Stephen doing all kinds of great work on Mariners Twitter. This is the Twitter handle is @notBobRoss. With some interesting spelling.
Same.
And by the way, can relate to that. Steven has also done an awesome job kind of taking this attention and putting it towards a good cause, which is to donate to the Trevor Project, which is
that's cool.
A nonprofit organization, which focuses on suicide prevention in LGBTQ plus youth, which is an incredible cause also. Again, we see this sometimes where just like someone has a tweet go viral on baseball Twitter and it's like, hey, wait a minute, I have all this attention. Let's go give some money to people that need it for good causes beyond just my $20 that I sent to this witch to turn the Mariners season around. So we love that. Good way to handle all this newfound attention. But no, back to your point, I do wonder this. I do wonder, right, are we going to see this witch at some point if the Mariners like win out and win the AL West, but 9-0 already. I mean, it's already been a grand success. The Mariners are in first place, sole possession of first place with the Astros loss on Sunday. It is an astonishing sequence of events. And yeah, when they're playing well, you're starting to see it. I know the Angels stink, but to see now both parts of the roster playing like a very good team where the pitchers are racking up the strikeouts and they're scoring a bunch of runs, and they look pretty good. So we'll see. They got this massive series against the Astros coming up next weekend, but they have already put themselves in position to control their own destiny and not have to worry about this ridiculous wild card race and just go out and win the AL West for the first time since 2001.
I need the players to acknowledge the Etsy Witch. I think that is very important. So Mariners, if you're listening, you know, Luke Rayleigh, if you're tapping in.
That's the thing. I am waiting. I don't know if we've had player acknowledgement yet, and I hope that we get it in some form over the next couple of weeks. So we will see. We will see. We will see. Again, it has been quite a success so far. So again, shouts out to Steven. We will see where this goes from here. All right, we have three more sweeps, Jake. Let's go to Toronto. Go for it.
Blue Jays sweeping the Baltimore Orioles, who frankly had been playing some good ball. You have Trevor Rogers doing well, but the Orioles bullpen not on Friday. Jays win 6-1. Game two, Scherzer good enough. Barger, 20th homer. The Blue Jays score three in the bottom of the ninth off of Keegan Aiken and Yennier Cano. Walk-off sack fly, they win 5-4. And then on Sunday, Shane Bieber good. George Springer just keeps on raking. Jays win 11-2. The main thing about this weekend, okay, was Brian Roberts, Orioles legend, getting himself in some hot water by criticizing Jays fans. This was an unforced error by Brian Roberts on the Orioles broadcast, saying, quote, "Sometimes we had some major questions about the baseball IQ of some Canadians. At times it felt like maybe they enjoyed or knew a little bit more about hockey than baseball." Blue Jays infielder Ernie Clement, friend of the program, responds, telling the Toronto Star, "We get 40,000 a night here. I mean, they probably get 5,000 a night. So it makes sense that you'd be a little salty about that." Roberts then apologized, and that was that.
Yeah, so our dear friend Kevin Brown, I think, did a pretty good job talking around this flub from Brian Roberts over the weekend. I think what's so funny about it is, like, Brian Roberts, like, hasn't been on that many broadcasts this year. I know he's been popped in and out. So kind of a tough, like, ratio of, like, only to piss off this many people in just a few appearances over the course of a season, and especially at this time of year where it's like Orioles, like, we just got to get the season over with and move on. Let's not attract attention for reasons that are not ideal.
Sure. On today's broadcast, Brian, yeah, just let's talk about, you know, being excited about next year's club and don't insult a nation. If you could just do that, I think we'll be good. We'll be good to go.
He's like, oh, man, whoops. Couldn't Ooh. Resist. And by the way, this is the other thing. You just read the quote, you know. Then Brian Roberts goes on Sunday and apologizes and is like, "I didn't mean any disrespect." And it's like, dude. But, like, it was really explicit. It's not that big of a deal. Like, this is not something, he should not be fired. Like, it's okay. I'm not saying this is the most offensive thing ever said on a broadcast. But let's not pretend like you didn't just say, like, yeah, I don't know. These are hockey fans. They don't know baseball. Like, that's what you said. So, I'm sorry. There's not really a way to misconstrue that. That was what was said. So, that's why you're Brian apologizing. Roberts, it's not because you slipped and didn't mean to disrespect. It's like, it sounds like you did, and that's okay.
You didn't slip, fall on your voice box, and go, "They're all hockey fans." Other sweep from this weekend, the Guards flying high, playing hot. They take all three over the White Sox. Three really close games because the Guardians don't score runs. They went 4-0, 3-1, and 3-2. Their starting pitching has been just sensational over the last week. The rotation has allowed 8 earned runs over their last 8 games. That's 1 per game for those of you keeping track at home. They are now 78-71, 7 games over 500 for the first time since May 24th, 2.5 games back of Houston. The end of the game on Sunday, I highly recommend going back and watching. So I'll just walk you through the story. On the dock, you had something that said outrageous Rocchio play at second base to end it. Okay. And I'm watching the highlights of the game and two outs in the ninth, and a fly ball is like flared, like a what seems like a routine fly out to right field. And Jonkenzie Noel is like lumbering in on a ball that should have been routine, and it just drops, and you're like, how did that drop? And then Brian Rocchio does indeed make one of the most fantastic plays I've seen at the Keystone all year. Just his ability to make that throw from an off-balance position on one knee while falling away towards the third base side. When you can play shortstops at second base and third and shortstop, like that really helps. That's really important.
Yeah, it was quite the tribute to Andrés Giménez, a former shortstop who also became basically the best second baseman we've seen. Rocchio has been making that transition this year and also hitting, honestly, just fine, like a league average for a couple months now, which by Guardian standards is legitimately good. But as you mentioned, it's been all about the pitching. You know, Ciccone had the near no-no last week, but as he joked, I think over the weekend, he was like, that was the third best start of the week. We got Cantillo going 8 scoreless. We had Bibee complete game shutout, best start of his career. Ciccone was solid again. Parker Messick has been awesome. He has been so much fun to watch. That has been one of the highlights of the Guardian season for me, watching them up close. And now here they are. You know, their playoff odds are now around 11%. They have to play the Tigers 6 times over the next 2 weeks. What are the Tigers playing for? That's kind of TBD, depending on how much the Mariners end up pushing them for that bye. We will see. But yeah, the Guardians pitching has been so good, and that has clearly kept them in it, and credit to them. You know, that run differential still ain't pretty, but who cares at this point? For you to still be playing meaningful games at this point in the season is very, very impressive. So they've got Detroit on the road, Minnesota 4 games this weekend, which is a big opportunity against not a good baseball team. So we'll see. And then they finish with the Tigers, and then the Rangers is their last series of the year. So there could be some pretty high stakes that we'll see where we're at once we get to that point. But certainly interesting to see where Cleveland is at over these next couple of weeks. I'm looking forward to seeing where they're at when they come home in a week.
Yeah, meaningful baseball. That's all that matters. Last sweep was the Sacramento A's beating a baseball team that I refuse to acknowledge. Highlight from this one was on Saturday, Nick Kurtz hitting a 493-foot grand slam, the longest tater since 2023. I don't know who they played, but it certainly was not a playoff team.
Oh. Reds, listen, if you heard what I said at the end of Friday's episode, that speaks for itself. You go all, by the way, they go like whatever, 4 months without getting swept, and now they're deciding to lose. Now it's like, oh yeah, now seems to be a good time to be getting swept. But yeah, Kurtz, man, holy crap. That was a special home run. And also like immediately, like first they bring in Barlow with the bases loaded, and it's like, all right, this'll cool him off. Oh, 500-foot grand slam. All right. Very unfortunate. Nick Kurtz, very impressive.
And it sounds A's, like man, a kid.
They're fun, dude. They can hit. Once they get some pitching, they're not going to be fun to play next year.
I like the idea that you bring a little kid to the baseball game, and like the next day you're like, hey, how was the game? The kid's like, oh, I saw a 500-foot grand slam. And you're like, sure you did, buddy.
It's like, oh, wait a minute. He did.
Oh, wait. Oh, no, he did.
You went to, like, yeah, dude.
Kid knows
Sutter
ball.
Health, man. It was freaking lit. Sutter Health on Saturday.
Kid at the Sun.
YOLO County, baby. YOLO for life. All right. We're going to take a break. When we return, we have 4 other notable series we want to highlight from the weekend. We'll be right back on Baseball Barbercast.
Welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. Let's go around the league. We had 2 clinches this weekend. Playoff clinches, not division clinches, but clinches nonetheless. Brewers over the Cardinals, Phillies over the Royals. both of whom had an opportunity to sweep heading into Sunday. Both of them dropped the ball, and that's why we're talking about them now. But let's do the Brewers first. Win an easy one on Friday, 8-2. And then the Saturday game, perfect Brewers win. They score two in the bottom of the eighth, three in the bottom of the ninth to send it to extras. Then down one in the bottom of the 10th, they score two. Caleb Durbin double. Andrew Monasterio single. Thanks for coming out. And that, they had clinched earlier in the day with, I guess, some other team lost some complicated math. And so I love the post-game clinch toast that precedes the full booze fountain by a number of days. And they had one of these. It included a very cool letter that was written in the style of Bob Uecker, read aloud by Pat Murphy. A letter that, by the way, like when I watched it for the first time, I teared up because it, now let's be clear, Bob Uecker did not write a letter before he passed away in January in which he referenced the Brewers having the best road record in 2025.
Yeah, seems unlikely.
That maybe, or like you, we talked about before, it's like, you know, the Tupac video in Chappelle. Maybe he knew it all. But what I liked about this letter is that all year Pat Murphy has been talking about how the spirit of Bob Uecker is still around and how Uecker uniquely defines this fan base, this franchise, this team, even from the next world. And for Murphy to craft this letter, or whoever helped him craft it, in the style of Bob Uecker, to kind of hat tip to Uecker, there was a great line in there about how he's playing in the league in the sky and how he made the roster as the third catcher. Being God's third catcher is just perfect Bob Uecker-ism. And there's no day games after night games. And, you know, it really did touch the spirit, that letter. And so good for Murphy for providing that moment.
Yeah. And again, just zooming farther out, we've been talking about the Brewers plenty, but this is incredible. This is an incredible season. This is, we don't know where this is going to go from here. And we're going to certainly have some challenging conversations about our optimism regarding the Brewers' ability to make a run in October in the coming weeks. But regardless, it is indisputable that all of us doubted this team. And not only did, you know, was it like last year where we doubted them and then they made the run and it was like, oh, wow, they made us look foolish. Like, yes, it has helped that so many of these other teams that we thought were going to be juggernauts have disappointed. That said, for the Brewers to be the first team to clinch, for the Brewers to clearly have the best record in baseball is an amazing accomplishment, regardless of what happens in October. And that should not be taken lightly, because while we have watched this team go to the postseason a lot over the last 10 years, this year does absolutely feel different. That doesn't promise anything in October, but the way that we have watched them do this in the regular season absolutely feels different, just in the way that we, you know, talked to Brian Anderson about when we had him on a while back. And I am fascinated, excited, curious, nervous, many feelings about this Brewers team going into October. They will, you know, celebrate the division title here soon. And wherever they go from here, I think it absolutely still has been a very special season. That said, before we move to the Phillies, the opposite of a special season is whatever the Cardinals were this year. I am nominating the Cardinals as the most forgettable team of 2025. I would love to hear people's opinions on that take. baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. Are they still technically four games back in the wild card? Yes, but that's part of the problem. This is not a good team. This is not a bad team. I have nothing to say about this team. There are other teams that have disappointed and sucked and deserve scorn or disappointment, or you know, this team, there's just nothing. It has been they have just floated through this season, and that is why they are going to end up probably at 500 or one game above or one game below. Let me know. Are the Cardinals the most forgettable team of 2025?
If the Tampa Bay Rays were not playing in a spring training stadium, I think they would be in the conversation as well. Are the Cardinals the first team to clinch back-to-back most forgettable teams of the year? Could have been them last year. That's hard to do. It's hard to be forgettable for two consecutive seasons. Lord knows we've done it on this podcast. Next series. Phillies taking two out of three over the Royals. Walker Buehler makes his Phillies debut on Friday night. Five strong, one earned. Ding-dongs from Harper and Stott. They win 8-2. Game two, Schwarber hits number 51 off Zerpdog Angel Serpa. Three more hits from Harrison Bader. Phillies outlast the Royals 8-6. Aaron Nola really bad on Sunday, which is not a good sign. He was great in that most recent start against the Mets, fighting for a postseason rotation spot. That fourth spot for the Phillies is up for grabs right now between Nola, Taijuan Walker, and maybe Walker Buehler. Who the heck knows? Royals win that finale 10-3. However, Schwarber does hit number 52. Only two behind Cal Raleigh. That's pretty fun. Let's tip our cap to Salvador Perez, who hit his 300th home run of his career over the weekend. His 300th home run also gave him 1,000 RBIs. So he was at 299 and 999 and hit a solo shot. Nice. And pushed him over the line for both. Appreciate that. The franchise record is 317 by George Brett. He probably passes that next year. The Royals have tumbled down the standings over the last week, a team that I expressed confidence in, albeit loosely. They're out of it now. I mean, they're six back in the wild card. The Mariners refusing to lose has been bad news for the Royals. Anything we want to say about the Phillies? I mean, their magic number to clinch a division title is one. A Phillies win or a Mets loss will give that to them. By not pulling it out on Sunday, they'll have to do it on the road as they head to LA this week.
Yeah, I just say the last thing on the Phillies is, you know, could they, you know, they're two games behind Milwaukee. So if they can, like I said, even take one game against the Dodgers, four and a half game lead, I believe, on the Dodgers for that second top spot in the National League. But I don't know. Two games behind Milwaukee, could they still end up with the best record in baseball? Maybe. I wouldn't totally rule it out. The schedule's not super favorable for them. They still have the Dodgers, D-backs, and then Twins and Marlins. So, I wouldn't totally rule that out, and we will see how hard they push for that once we get down to those last handful of games.
Correct me if I'm wrong, and maybe I'm overstating this. I feel like the one seed in the NL is kind of big this year. Because what scares you more, Mets, Dodgers, or Cubs, Padres? Like, I would way rather play the winner of a Cubs, Padres series than the winner of a Mets, Dodgers series, personally.
Yeah, that's a fair way to look at it. Yeah, no. So we will see. We will see how that shakes out. But Phillies still, you know, they're definitely feeling good. Sunday aside, the opposite of feeling good is the New York Mets until yesterday. Because the New York Mets were in free fall going into the weekend, welcoming in a red-hot Rangers team. But it was important to recognize that, listen, you still look at the talent on paper between these two teams. You look at the fact that the Mets have been way better at home and the Rangers have been way worse on the road. And you said, okay, as bad as it's been, this opposite of a direction as these two teams are going, you would think that the Mets could get right in this weekend.
And then Jonah Tong took the mound on Friday night and went, ah!
Oh, this game's really important. Oh, God. Oh, God.
Oh, that's a big moment.
Listen, Jonah Tong's going to be a good pitcher. But this is whatever. Yes, like Brandon Sroat goes out there and throws six scoreless the next day. Like, rookies are rookies. And sometimes it's really cool and you're like, oh, he's clearly our best pitcher. I mean, why wouldn't we send him out there? And then other times when it happens to Jonah Tong, you're like, what are we thinking? Why would we have Jonah Tong pitch in this game? This is crazy. Well, so
Nolan McLean,
you see both ends of the spectrum. Yeah.
Nolan McLean went six scoreless with seven Ks on Sunday. Like, it just depends. Tong, like you said, he's going to be good. But on Friday, he just did not have it. The Rangers score six in the top of the first. Tong leaves the mound before DeGrom gets on it.
That was not the plan, obviously, for the Mets on Friday evening. And then DeGrom does DeGrom stuff. He was really good. Seven innings, three earned runs. Rangers win easily on Friday. And then on Saturday, it's like, okay, Brandon Sproat comes out, sets the tone. Six scoreless innings, only like 70 pitches. Mendoza's like, nah, the stuff was down. We got to take him out. We got to go to the bullpen. Surely
that's the Mendoza line.
Bullpen. That was he reached the Mendoza pitches line a lot faster than people thought, and he was pulled. And then Rogers and Diaz could not hold the lead as the Rangers rally late and they win 3-2. And that really felt like rock bottom. That was like, oh my God, this is really happening. Like the Mets are doing this. They're going to blow. they're gonna miss the playoffs. Like we've sort of been like talking around it over the last few weeks. And that was just like, oh man, like it's but really Friday, happening. And,
dude.
Yeah.
For me, that moment was Friday night when it was Tong pees his pants, DeGrom dominant, and then Patrick Bailey walk off grand slam on the other coast. And you're just like,
true.
These are headed in opposite directions. Mets saved the weekend on Sunday with a Pete Alonso 3-run walk-off homer. The bottom of the 10th. McClain was amazing. He leaves. Bullpen immediately blows a 2-0 lead in the 7th inning. The second McClain gets out of there. Pete does the job. First homer in 44 at-bats for him. Something that seems to happen like twice a month now is Pete does something after a big win. And they give him the mic and he's like, guys, please keep coming. Please keep showing up. We got this. Please.
I will say the one other thing we have to mention about this weekend is that the Mets had their old timers day on Oof. Saturday before they blew that Saturday game. And it was very similar to the Yankees one earlier this season, where it was like amidst a terrible skid for the Yankees. I think that was, I'm pretty sure it was a weekend that you were off and I talked about it with Lance Brzdowski, but it was so funny because basically you have all these former Mets showing up. And so all the media is going to talk to all these former Mets and being like, man, this What's Mets wrong? Season, what do you think? And then of course they're all like, well, what do you mean? Now it's a little bit different. You don't have as many, you know, World Series champions showing up as you did with the Yankees, but either way, kind of a tough scene. You have, you know, the Mets, And then to lose that game was very bad. But yeah, Pete really, really saving their ass on Sunday, and also a pretty crushing result for Texas as well, who was trying to keep up. You know, they're still now only two games behind the Astros, and they're about to play the Astros, so the opportunity is still there for them. But Texas, you know, if we think they're going away, at this point, again, it doesn't even really matter who they're rolling out there. I mean, this roster is yeah. half full of guys that most people have never heard of, but credit to them. And they're definitely still in it, but a huge, huge win for the Mets, who are still only a game and a half over the Giants and two over the Diamondbacks, which is just totally breaks my brain.
More I don't want to talk later. About them.
We don't. Yeah. Snakes alive is in the most confusing and, you know, discouraging and least inspiring way possible. But anyway, good for the Rangers for getting 2 out of 3. And speaking of the Rangers, let's talk about the Houston Astros. Our last series we want to highlight before we take a break. Houston Astros go into Atlanta and take two out of three. Altuve homers a couple hours after we were questioning whether he's still good on Friday's podcast. Zach Cole, another great example of like Astros farm system ranks 30th. You've never, all these prospects stink. And then they come up and are just like immediately good. So Zach Cole, I guess he's the latest version of that. Outfielder homers on the first pitch of his career. Hurston Waldrop gets crushed. Astros cruise on Friday. Hunter Brown was very good on Saturday. The bottom of the Astros lineup, which has generally not been awesome, was much better on Saturday. They win 6-2. But then Fromber cannot pitch well enough to complete the sweep for Houston on Sunday. ERA over 6 in his last 8 starts. A very just, what is going on? How did we get here moment with Sandy Leone homering off Craig Kimbrell in an Astros-Braves game on Sunday as the Braves win 8-3. And with the Mariners passing them in the division, now we're looking at the Astros and being like, wait a minute, are you going to miss the postseason? Because that would be in some ways an even bigger deal than the Mariners blowing it for whatever year in a row. The Astros missing the playoffs completely would be a shock. It in some ways makes sense because of what they've been through this year and just like the state of their roster, but also a huge deal. And as you correctly write on the document here, as it sounds hyperbolic, this is potentially an era-defining week for the Astros. Now, what they've accomplished is what they've accomplished, and it has been an amazing run. But they have this week, they've got the Rangers and the Mariners. And man, oh man! I mean, what a time for the Houston Astros at this. It was already we already learned a lot about them last year and how their season ended. For what they've accomplished this year, this is a hell of a week. They really are the team to watch this week. Above all else, is the Houston Astros. I think pretty clearly.
They have 3 against the Rangers. 3 against the Mariners. We'll talk to you all about that a week from today. Let's take a break, and when we get back, we'll do turbo mode, dude. Like, Padres, Rockies, buckle up. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jordan does not stretch then run, but he can still go fast. It's turbo mode.
Faster than fast, quicker than quick. I am lightning.
I feel the need for speed.
It's turbo time.
Padres taking 3 out of 4 over the Colorado Rockies, winning 2-0 on Thursday. They lose 4-2. Tanner Gordon, who's on the Rockies, 6 innings, 1 run. J.P. Sears, who the Padres got in the Mason Miller deal, is not good enough. Rocks win 4-2. They bounce back through the Padres. Dylan Cease awesome. The offense clobbers Bradley Blaylock and Antonio Senzatella. Tatis Machado, Merrill all homer early. That's what it's supposed to look like. They win 11-3. Then on Sunday, the Dads jump all over Germán Márquez, who can't get out of the third inning, and win 9-6. Padres still 2.5 back of the Dodgers. Not having... I know it was a good weekend for the Padres, but like, you play the Rockies, it's just, you know. Not having Bogarts kind of is a big blow for them, because they have to rearrange the infield in a way that makes it bad at defense, right? So Cronenworth moves from second to short, and then Arise moves from first to second, which is just a supreme downgrade over what they usually have. Curious to see how that manifests. Padres are going to the Mets this week in what will be a fascinating series.
Yeah, and also, like, Manny Machado has rated extremely poorly defensively this year. He has trended very down. He's still capable of making Machado-esque plays, but yes, defense not necessarily a strength. I will say, even though it is the Rockies, Jackson Merrill homering in 3 of these 4 games is very encouraging. We've mentioned him as someone who we'd really like to see heat up, especially with Bogarts out. Really good to see Merrill have a bit of a power surge. Rockies' 40th series loss of the year. Nobody else has lost more than 30 series. So they are 1 win away from avoiding being last year's White Sox. They got 2 weeks to do it. They play the Mariners, Giants, Angels, and Marlins. So I like their chances to get at least 1 in there, but we are still going to sweat it out until they clinch win number 42. Let's go to the Diamondbacks, who took 2 out of 3 over the Minnesota Twins in Minnesota. Twins win the opener thanks to a 3-homer game from Cody Clemens. Yeah, that's the Twin season, folks. Cody Clemens is 3 home runs. Luke Kuechel walk-off sac fly against the Diamondbacks bullpen, which is just a group of people that are pitching very frequently. Ryan Nelson was very good, though, on Saturday. He's kind of sneaky decent. He pitches Joe Ryan.
He's been their best pitcher.
He has been. He's given up a whole lot of hard contact, but he has recorded enough outs that, God bless him. Good for Ryan Nelson. Diamondbacks win in extras. And then they also win on Sunday. James McCann drives in 4 runs. He's on the Diamondbacks. Surprise, surprise. And get 5 scoreless from Nabil Chrismat. There you go, folks. That's the state of the Diamondbacks pitching
staff. That's the sentence.
And they're 2 back. They're two back. How is this possible? This is absurd. I mean, this is totally about the Mets. But I cannot believe this team is even in the stratosphere of the playoffs. And I don't even know. I mean, yes, they have an awesome offense. Like, they traded away Suarez and Naylor. It doesn't matter. They still score a bunch of runs. Corbin Carroll is amazing. And they have other guys that can score runs. That's great. Torey Lovello, Wow. I am impressed. I'm confused. I'm angry. So many feelings about the Diamondbacks being 2 games back at this stage. They play the Giants this week, I believe, at home. But holy crap. All right. 3 more series.
Chicago Cubs. 1 second, dude.
Oh, yeah?
1 second.
Yeah.
I just want to read this again. On Sunday, James McCann's 4 RBI day gives the Diamondbacks a 6-4 win. They get 4 scoreless innings from Nabil Chrismat. Okay, you can continue.
DeSclafani with the hold. Kyle Backus with his 2nd save of the season. Ildemaro Vargas with a hit off the bench Jorge Barrosa batting eighth. All right. Cubs take 2 out of 3 over the Rays of Tampa Bay. Matthew Boyd was good on Friday. Ian Happ, who has been awesome lately, fellow podcaster Ian Happ, he hits his 21st homer.
He could be the hitting Saturday, coach for the Rangers.
It's true. Podcast that knows ball. I would take him. Saturday was a mix of emotions for Cubs fans as they get to celebrate Anthony Rizzo. And honestly, shame on us. We did not take a moment last week to tip our hat to Anthony Rizzo announcing his retirement.
I believe the news came out during the pod.
Okay. So either way, let's take the moment now. Anthony Rizzo, what a career. We could have a longer conversation about Anthony Rizzo's career. Sorry, we're not going to do that right now. But he had it seemed like a very fun day on Saturday, which included sitting in the bleachers, which is like of course, Anthony Rizzo retiring as a Cub goes out and sits in the bleachers. And then Moises Ballesteros hits his first career homer directly to Anthony Rizzo. You couldn't hit it more like it was for him. It was right there. But clearly, Anthony Rizzo, for the thousands of baseballs he has caught at first base over his career with a glove, out there gloveless, and just completely
and presumably sober.
And presumably sober when he's playing Major League Baseball. In this case, probably a little tipsy, doesn't have a glove, and even though it went right to him, he does not catch it. But that was not the worst part of the Cubs' day, as their bullpen totally blows it. Junior Caminero and Nick Fortes homer late as the Rays win 5-4. Cubs bounce back and win with a nice late comeback on Sunday. And also, like, the Cubs are in a spot right now because they're so far behind the Brewers and fairly ahead of the Padres, where they're just kind of floating their way to that top wild card spot. Maybe it's a little too early to say we're definitely seeing Cubs Padres in that first game or in that wild card round, but that's really what it's felt like. And so the stakes don't feel quite as dramatic.
Sure.
That said, when they clinch here in the coming days, like, it's a big deal. The Cubs going back to the postseason and hosting playoff games at Wrigley Field, like, that is a big deal. But it is kind of a weird time for the Cubs because, like, that loss should have felt like a way bigger deal than it actually did on Saturday. And you know, they do bounce back on Sunday.
They're the playoff team with, like, the lowest stakes, it feels like, playing for the least. Yeah. If they were in the American League, they would have the second best record. They have a better record than the Tigers now. One fewer loss, same number of wins. So they would have a bye in the American League. The Anthony Rizzo stuff was awesome. Something, you know, Anthony Rizzo, face of the Cubs team that won the World Series. You know, Chris Bryant was the best player on that team. But I think it's fair to say that Anthony Rizzo was the most important, notable, front-facing player on that team. The face of it, right? And something that I think people always appreciated about Anthony Rizzo was how he utilized his notoriety, utilized his fame. He always felt approachable to fans. As a survivor of childhood cancer, he spent a ton of time in the community, and the jersey that he wore to be retired in on Saturday was just one of the most beautiful things I've seen in a long time. It had all of the signatures of all the various kids that he had visited in the hospital over the years. You know, kids are often asking players for their autographs. Rizzo brought this jersey and had all the kids sign it whenever he would go visit. And that's what he retired in. And, like, that's it, dude. Like, that's it. That's the point of this. Like, who wins and who loses these games makes us happy or sad. But Anthony Rizzo having a meaningful, real, lasting impact on people's lives, like, big tip of the cap to you. Heck of a career. Very excited to see what he does in retirement. Two more series, Marlins over the Tigers. They win the first two games of this one. Tarek Skubal leaves early in Friday night's game. Everyone's like, oh my God, injury to his side. I believe it was like his left rib area. He seems to be okay. Any more news comes on that, we'll evaluate as we go. Tigers end up avoiding the sweep on Sunday. 5 scoreless from Keiter Montero, who gives the ball to Jose Urquidy, who I just learned is on the Tigers. Last series to talk about, Nats over the Pirates. They get homers from Brady House and Dylan Cruz. Friday night, win 6-5. Bubba Chandler dominates in game 2. Good to see him have success at the big league level. And the Nats win 4-3 with 4 scoreless from their shaky pen. But the important thing here, James Wood, strikeout watch, everybody. James Wood running towards the all-time single season strikeout record. Again, we like James Wood. He's a great player. I think he's a very good kid. He's going to have a phenomenal career. He has been worth, I believe, 3.5 wins as a 12-year-old. He has been great. Slow second half, great year, unbelievable step in the correct direction. He has 204 strikeouts right now. He struck out twice in all three games over the weekend to keep that record in his lack of sights. He is at 204. The record is 223. He needs 19 strikeouts over the final 13 games.
Yeah, 13. I mean, I think it's even more likely than it was when we talked about it a few weeks ago at this point, assuming he stays in the lineup every day. So we will see. They play, let's see, their remaining schedule. Okay, Mets, White Sox, Braves. So Braves is an interesting one. They have 7 more games against the Braves. And like some of those pitchers, it's like half AAA pitchers and then like Chris Sale. So
and Spencer Strider.
And Strider, but Strider's not. Whatever. Sale Strider is almost a guaranteed 2 strikeouts like at this point for Wood. So, but some of these other pitchers that he's facing, he might just hit like 5 more homers. Yeah, you got to sit. If we're going to sit him in any game, just sit him against Sale, right?
Sit him against Sale.
He doesn't miss games. He doesn't miss games. Like, what are they going to let Daylen Lyle get the at bats? Sale. Come on. I'd rather see Daylen Lyle hit.
He's going to sit against Sale tomorrow. It's the second game of a doubleheader. Sale is starting the nightcap. He's going to sit in the second game.
I don't know, man. I think he's just going to play him out, and I think he's going to get this record. But like we said, James Wood, awesome. Every team, he was on such a short list of players that you would want to have. Like if you were just drafting, like, hey, you can just start a team with one player. James Wood is very, 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 very high on the list. All right, Jake. Well, we're done. Almost done, I should say. Yeah. Were you going to say anything else about the Nationals, or can we talk about the week ahead?
Well, I was just going to say something about James Wood. FanGraphs does its trade value rankings, right? Mm-hmm. And James Wood was ranked 5th.
Yeah.
In baseball.
And I don't think that would change very much with him striking out 224 times. So,
yeah, I would put him behind
Gunnar Henderson. He's amazing.
But that's just me.
That's okay. As you said, we do not have very many regular season baseball games left. We have 4 series left for each team. And this week, Rangers at Astros. Oh, boy. Phillies at Dodgers. How much does that actually matter? We'll see. Padres at Mets. Okay, you have my attention. Giants at D-backs. Somehow, some way, you have my attention. Guardians at Tigers. Definitely important. Rays, I guess, are... You know what? You know what's great here? The Blue Jays have 4 games at the Stein. The Blue Jays could celebrate a division title at the Yankee spring training facility. Oh, that's delicious. Oh, man. Oh, man. Okay, that just hit me. I hope that happens. Again, I'm not rooting for anyone, but that would be pretty funny. That would be pretty funny. I'm just saying. Mariners go to Kansas City before they go to Houston this weekend. By the way, quickly, the email we got from Jesse about switch hitting home run records. Jesse, who's a Mariners fan, is like, why is everyone so freaking out over Cal Raleigh having the switch hitting home run record? Like, what is it that big of a deal to be a switch? It's like the very simple answer to this, Jesse, because I understand what you're getting at and being like, why are we talking about this record that Mickey Mantle has that's a lower number than the Mariners franchise record or the American League record, all the other things, is that switch hitting is just hard. It's really hard to do. And while, yes, he always has the platoon advantage, the fact that no other switch hitter ever has hit more home runs than this is why we're talking about this in this context. So, yes, it is true. It is not a larger number than Ken Griffey Jr. But I think we should just think more simply from the standpoint of switch hitting is amazing. And oftentimes switch hitters are way worse from one side. That was true for Cal Raleigh until this season when he became amazing right-handed. So that is why I think that it is a worthy moniker in the same way that it is amazing that he has the record as a catcher and as a switch hitter and all those other things. That is my take, but I understand your email. Thank you for the email. Anyway, we will see where Cal Raleigh ends up with his final home run total. We do have some other games going on this week, obviously. But until then, thank you all for listening. You can email us baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. Thank you, Andrew Hartz, TJ Brassel, for producing as always. We'll talk to you all on Wednesday. Bye.